Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, June 29th, 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is IGN host and producer, Stella Chung. Stella, welcome back.
Hi, glad to be here. I was really surprised to get the DM from Greg last night being like, hey, do you want to be on with Blessing? And I'm like, sure. I missed him last time because he was playing hooky. Sick. So,
well, that's the thing is, like, the thing about Kinda Funny is that people are always getting sick. And so today we were supposed to have Janet Garcia. Janet got sick. And then yesterday I was like, hey, Greg, have you figured out what Games Daily looks like for me tomorrow? And he was like, oh, shit. No, I'm not. Okay, let me know. Let me text the number one games journalist that I know at IGN.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah, you're just buttering me up right now, huh?
Oh, yeah. So I can knock you down during these news stories. What is the score and update?
It's there.
Last time you were here, you're like the biggest Scorn fan. They revealed the release date with a new trailer. Are you excited for the release of Scorn now?
I mean, I've been excited.
Are you more excited?
Yeah, because like, okay, so it's one of those things where you're just like, oh, cool, it's still being developed. The path to release is looking great. Excited. It looks great. I prefer this over Callisto Project because Callisto Project looks really scary and the Dead Space remake also looks super scary, but this just looks gross, right? I can handle gross. I can't handle scary shit.
Are you not a horror person?
I cannot handle horror very well, so no. Definitely not a horror person. I actually just played Little Hope, which was the Dark Pictures anthology game, and the little like jump scares they had, it fucking got me. Hated it.
Are you at all interested in The Quarry?
Yeah, I am actually.
Yeah, The Quarry is dope. But the thing is, like, when I go through the fucking Supermassive titles, right? Like, The Quarry is the one that kind of brought me back in a big way. Cause, like, you mentioned not being into horror. I'm somebody who I'm very recently, like, super into horror, right? Okay. Like, between Stranger Things, between what was the House on the Hill, the latest show from that dude. Barry, you know which one I'm talking about. The Catholic one.
The shows that Raul are in, right?
Yeah. The latest one with Raul Foley.
What is that called? Midnight Mass.
Thank you. Yes. Watching Midnight Mass followed by Stranger Things followed by playing The Quarry, I was like, shit, I might be very big into horror. So right now, like, Callisto Protocol is one that I'm super anticipating. The Scorn is also, like, The Scorn is on my list. Not necessarily for the horror of it, but I'm kind of with you that I think the gross aspects of it seem pretty interesting. Yeah. I kind of want to get my hands on that flesh gun.
Right? Oh my God. Like, the reload is so squelchy and shit. It's great. Anyways, yeah, we keep going. Last time I was here, people were like, oh, Stella's a freak. And I'm like, yeah, y'all been knowing.
That's the brand.
Yeah.
Rock it. Well, Stella, enough about this freaky shit. Let's talk about today's stories, which include Blizzard acquiring a new studio, Sony starting a PC gaming brand, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/Kinda Funny Games. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, or bronze members or above, get to write in. And silver members or above, get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, a new Kinda Funny Games cast is up, and it is me, Greg, and Andy, and maybe one of the most chaotic Games cast episodes of all time, because Kevin is out, Barrett is out, and Tim was out. They were all out yesterday, so it was me, Greg, and Andy having to stitch together this episode with duct tape, but we talk about whether or not we're still in love with our Nintendo Switches. That is up right now on youtube.com/kindafunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. We're also recording our Miss Marvel episode 4 review pretty much right now as I speak. That'll be up on youtube.com/kindafunny and on the Screencast podcast feed. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Gordon McGuire and Fargo Brady. Today we're brought to you by Athletic Greens, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 7 stories today.
A baker's dozen.
And before I get into story number 1, Barrett, welcome back. You're in Hawaii.
Oh, thanks. Yes, I was in Hawaii until literally yesterday.
How was the trip?
It was great. It was a fun time. Some friends came with us as well to finally celebrate Alyssa and I getting married 2 years ago, like a couple months into the pandemic. The original plan was to like get married here, have a party here in San Francisco for, you know, friends here and some of my family back from Ohio, and then do a separate celebration in Hawaii for a lot of, like, Alyssa's family that can't necessarily, like, fly anywhere and stuff like that. And now we finally got to do that 2 years later, so that was really exciting. And we did a lot of fun stuff around the kind of party celebration, whatever you want to call it. That was really fun. We got to do some things with Dornbush and Yusuf, friend of the show. And
I saw really fun pictures. I was like, damn,
yeah,
I kind of want to be in Hawaii right now.
Yeah, it was a great time. We'll have plenty of stories to tell on this month's Kinda Funny Next Gen podcast recording today, going up this Sunday for patreon.com/kindafunny or patreon.com/kindafunnygames at the gold tier.
At the gold tier. We'll you can write in if you're at the silver tier.
Yeah, you can write in at the silver tier, but you can't watch at the silver tier, but you can watch at the gold tier. But yeah, we went to a friend's farm and stuff like that. It'll be some fun stories.
One of those farms that Hawaii is well known for.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
When I think Hawaii, I just think farms.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. It's a lot of farming on Hawaii.
What is up with like this Tony Hawk Pro Skater or Tony Hawk Underground?
Yeah, okay. Hold on. There's the link. Let me look at this.
Yeah. Hold on. So I'll share it here through Discord. So we booked an Airbnb for the trip, but we knew that we were flying in a day before the Airbnb was available. So we knew we had to book a hotel for like the first night. And there's this hotel that Alyssa's always wanted to stay at called the Royal Hawaiian. And she was trying to describe it to me when she booked it, and she was like, yeah, it's like this really prominent, like really historic hotel. It's pink. And I had a connecting moment in my brain where I was like, pink hotel, Hawaii. Oh my God. It's the hotel from Tony Hawk.
That's so stupid. I just saw it. It's so dumb.
So here we go. We've got the very important moment from Tony Hawk's Underground.
Of course.
Where your skater does the McTwist over the rooftops. And Dornbush and I got to see it in person.
That's so stupid.
That was fantastic.
The best part is this guy with the fucking camcorder. Shit.
That's fucking amazing. I watched the video and I did not put it together that you had photoshopped you and Dornbush in there. I know this mission.
I just edited the picture. Like,
yeah, you just threw it in there on Premiere.
It's like a fucking, oh my God, do you remember Windows Movie Maker? Literally that.
Oh, yeah.
I spent two minutes making it last night, and that's all I really wanted. Like, when we took the picture, that was literally my vision
for it.
I wasn't trying to put any more effort into it.
That's amazing. No. I watched the video, and I did not even think about the fact that it was you and Dornbush in there.
I was so funny.
It's the NPCs watching it from the floor, and then it panned back.
The NPCs.
Yeah, we're the NPCs.
That could be a cool crew name.
Generic white boys in Hawaii. I mean, they are NPCs, dude. What are you talking about?
If Baron and Dornbush start a band, I would love it to be called the NPCs.
People are asking, why is Dornbush there? Yes. For those who don't know, Dornbush, again, with the original wedding plans, was my best man. So that's why he came out on the trip for all of us.
Yeah.
That's
cute. Congratulations, Barrett. Love that for you.
Yeah, congratulations for getting it in Hawaii.
In Hawaii. You gotta love getting it in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Hell
except
yeah.
for the sand, thanks. But you know, at least you're on the farms, so maybe it was just like straw you had to worry about.
Well,
but,
it wasn't.
You know,
we weren't just going to farms. We also like hung out at the beach and stuff. I just felt like the storm.
What animals were at these farms, Garrett?
Oh my God! I literally like shared pictures of it like last week. We'll talk about it on the next gen.
Pictures of you getting it in. God
oh
damn!
Oh my God!
You guys have
get to the
really
news, you freaks.
Let's get into the Roper Report with story number one. Blizzard acquires Spellbreak studio Proletariat. I'm pulling from Dean Takahashi at GamesBeat. Blizzard Entertainment has acquired Spellbreak maker Proletariat to beef up the staff on its massively multiplayer online role-playing game, World of Warcraft. Under the deal, Boston-based Proletariat will become part of Blizzard, and its team of 100 people will begin working on World of Warcraft, including the Dragonflight expansion coming later this year. Spellbreak, a battle royale game where wizards and witches cast spells at each other, will be sunset. The company announced this news yesterday. Activision Blizzard, the parent company of Blizzard, also folded Vicarious Visions, a longtime Activision studio, into Blizzard to work on the Diablo franchise back in January 2021. Stella, you're one of my battle royale dudes, right? You know about the battle royale genre.
Fuck yeah, like, I'm a dude, finally. Fuck yeah.
You're rights again. You're one of you're on fire today, first of all. You're on fire. Second of all, you're one of the people I go to for like battle royale knowledge. Somebody who was into Spellbreak?
I actually really was. Yeah. So I remember playing like early in early access slash alpha, whatever. I really loved it. It obviously had some issues that it needed to iron out, but all I know is that it kept improving. But of course, I feel like Spellbreak was one of those games that kind of suffered from being out in early access for too long. You know, Ark Evolved also had this issue where it was out for so long that people are like, oh, well, we already played this, we already paid for it, why would I want to play this when it's like fully out? So Spellbreak being out and in development for so long, I think that actually ended up just kind of hurting them in the long run, because it was a really good game. It was so fun. I mean, you saw players like Shroud and Lyric playing this game, and it had a lot of potential, but the fact that they just took too long to really hone it in, I think that's why it suffered from that's why it suffered in development hell. So
did this sadden you to see it go away? Like, was Spellbreak one that was still on your radar?
Yeah, I constantly was looking for like the release date and stuff, but you know, it was just they did pump out updates, but it just wasn't enough. And especially with other battle royales, you know, like Fortnite doing so well and Apex constantly being updated, it's just hard to compete in that atmosphere. I just feel like it was in development for a little bit too long here. It sucks. It was such a fun game.
How do you feel? So are you somebody that plays World of Warcraft?
God, I tried so hard to get into it. My ex was super into it. So that was like the only time, like, because he would be like, oh, hey, I'm going to go do some raids. But like, I'm going to shut out the entire world. So I'm just like, oh, I'll try getting into World of Warcraft. It's so fucking boring. I'm so sorry. It's so fucking boring.
Yeah. Are you an MMO person? Because that's the same thing I kind of experienced. Right? I try to get into Final Fantasy 14 because Michael Hyam, my roommate, and every single person I know that's like fucking like super nerdy into MMOs or Final Fantasy seems to absolutely adore and evangelize Final Fantasy 14 in a way that makes me want to get into it. Right? Like, I love games like Nier Automata. I love games like Undertale. And usually when I say that to people, they're like, oh, you should get into Final Fantasy 14 because like the soundtrack will hit you in the feels. The story will hit you in the feels. It tugs all those same emotional beats that those games do. And so Final Fantasy 14 is the MMO that I've tried to give the chance to. And even that, I put in hours into it, and I'm just like, I'm not this is not my kind of game, right? I do not belong in this space. The closest thing that I can get into regarding an MMO probably would be a GTA Online, which I know is an MMO, but I kind of put it as adjacent in terms of a, like, you know, ongoing, like, I'm returning to it all the time. I'm playing the new expansions, the new missions they add to that. Like, GTA Online, for all intents and purposes, is pretty much my MMO. And even like things like Genshin very much is an MMO because that's even barely multiplayer. But like Genshin I get into as well as like an ongoing type of game. Those are more the things that I lean into as opposed to the Final Fantasy 14s and the World of Warcrafts of the world. So I find this transition for the Spellbreak studio Proletariat getting absorbed by Blizzard to then work on World of Warcraft interesting. It's not one that affects me because I wasn't really playing Spellbreak. I played a little bit at launch, didn't really like it that much. I respected the vision because it was this fantasy battle royale that was more about casting spells. Like, I don't even think they had guns in the game. It was very much like, here's the rock spell, here's the ice spell, here's the fire spell, and it is you equipping these spells and battling each other in that way, which I think is novel. I thought was interesting and cool, but gameplay wise just didn't land with me as much. But I did know that it had at least, like, if not a small audience there that was still supporting it. So seeing it get absorbed is very interesting in a way where it's like, wow, that's kind of not random, but also random at the same time, if you know what I mean.
No, it definitely feels random. Like, why are they going into World of Warcraft? I mean, it's good for them that they're, you know, getting bought out and they're still finding work, which is great, but it's definitely like a big change. But I guess it kind of makes sense because it's more about spells and stuff as opposed to like, hey, here's a Glock.
Like, that's true. Yeah, like thematically the DNA is there. And yeah, the one reason I say it's not as surprising is it didn't seem like Spellbreak was killing it. Right. When we talk about the battle royales that are in the space, usually you're talking about Apex, Fortnite, Warzone. Then even below that, you're probably talking about PUBG and others. But like, how often do we even talk about PUBG anymore, let alone a game like Spellbreak? No. Right. Yeah. Like, there are so few battle royales that I feel like come up in the conversation as far as, hey, like, yeah, my friends and me love Rome Royale. Like, when was the last time you heard somebody say that?
Oh,
you know,
God.
I know there's probably an audience there, but that's one where it's like, how well is that game sustaining itself as opposed to like maybe that combined with Paladins, combined with the other games that studio is making, supporting each other, right? Spellbreak seems like one that just wasn't long for this world. And the way that I look back at a game like Darwin Project that I really loved, right? A different kind of battle royale.
Yeah, that was
Darwin
so
Project
cool.
was off the chain.
Oh, it was so cool. It had such good ideas. Oh my God. That was such a cool game. But,
and like, it hurt me so much when that game shut down. Cause I really dug Darwin Project, right? It was the 12 player free for all. You're in an open environment. It is, you know, survival, crafting, but it also is like one player is the show host that is controlling the things that are going on in the map in a really cool way. And I had such fun playing that game, but that game went away because it didn't have the fan base there, even though it had niche audience that included me, right? Like, Spellbreak, I think, is a very similar thing. And to see it not perform to the way that they probably wanted it to perform, it probably come down to the studio being like, all right, like, hey, Blizzard is approaching us with this opportunity. We can cut from Spellbreak and chase the bag and you know, let the studio and the 100 people we have working here continue to have work and continue to thrive under Blizzard, or continue working on this thing that has an uncertain future. I totally understand how you let go of Spellbreak and go, all right, fuck it. Like, let's work on World of Warcraft, because also this Blizzard is World of Warcraft. Think about how many people's dream job that is to work on something like World of Warcraft.
That's fair. I mean, it's definitely one of those things where it's like, I don't blame them at all, but you know, it does suck a little bit. But yeah, the audience was definitely not there. Also, you asked me, but then you kind of went on a ramble about your own preference.
I did go on a rant, yeah.
I do like Final Fantasy XIV. For some reason, that is the only MMO that has actually been able to capture my attention. And I think it has to do with the fact that you can customize your character for like down to the tiniest detail. So I actually really did like Final Fantasy XIV. It just takes me a really long time to like, I go between waves and wanting to play a game that's like, you know, you have to go from one point to another. And it's after a certain point, you're just like, okay, I'm just doing fetch quests. This is kind of annoying. Yeah. But at the same time, like, the community is so great. I really love the fact that I can, you know, dress up my character however I want. And I love that sort of stuff. Also, the raids are super cool. And the story in Final Fantasy XIV is actually so good, which is why it actually captures my attention, as opposed to like, I don't know, World of Warcraft. I'm just like, there's so much to catch up on. I don't care.
Yeah, like, I think that's the other thing that has me attracted to more, just something like 14 or other contemporary MMOs as opposed to WoW, is that I know there's so much history to World of Warcraft that I don't feel like catching myself up on.
Yeah. Also, you can get married in Final Fantasy XIV, so maybe you and Barrett can tie things down, you know?
I literally just got back from Hawaii to celebrate me being tied down for the last 2 years.
You don't want to get tied down again? You don't want to get it in again?
No, I'm good.
In the virtual space, Barrett? Me?
Yeah.
Final Fantasy XIV? They got a whole Hawaii. Let's fucking go. Yeah,
this seems like a lot of work. I feel like we probably got to get to a certain level for that to happen. Bless, you know how these fucking games go.
Hey man, you know, we can get up there, right? The confidant levels. We can level that thing up slowly. Get to 10. All of a sudden, it's Valentine's Day, and you've discovered that I have so many other partners, and it becomes a problem. But to get back to the story for a second,
such
right?
A specific reference.
It is such a specific reference, and let me tell you, first time that happened to me in Persona, I was like, oh, shit. Did not think that Yukiko would discover this other chick that I'm talking to. But hey, you know, it happens. Valentine's Day. Prepare everybody. But to get back to the story for a second, right? I find it interesting that the story invokes the Vicarious Visions thing, right? Where Vicarious Visions got folded into working on Diablo. In Vicarious Visions, that was the studio that was working on Tony Hawk 1 plus 2. They also put out the Crash Bandicoot remake. And according to Tony Hawk, they're also going to work on Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 plus 4, which would have been my dream project from Vicarious Visions, because I fucking love Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3. And so it hurts my heart that Tony Hawk spilled the beans on that one, because I could have gone without knowing that game got put on the shelf. That's a thing I think that's the one part of this that kind of bums me out. The corporate consolidation, right? Like, I like the idea of studios being able to put out their own ideas, lean into those ideas, and have a bunch of different vibrant games that are painting the ecosystem, right? Not everything needs to be a bona fide hit. Not everything needs to be a breakout success that is making millions and billions of dollars. The fact that Spellbreak wasn't doing great, and that then allows the studio to get absorbed by Activision Blizzard, which is a studio that has been doing a lot of this, not to make new games, but to continue to work on the big money makers that they already have. I think that is the big bummer for me out of this story. Like, the corporate consolidation in the industry continues to be a thing that concerns me and scares me, not in a doom and gloom way, not in a the sky is falling kind of way, because when studios get bought up, other studios at the same time are being created, right? And so you have a thing like Callisto Protocol come through from a new studio, or you have a bunch of other studios come through and work on new games, right? That's no Moon Studio coming out and working on a game. Who knows what kind of game that they could be working on? Certainly not Star Wars. You have stuff like that happening, and so like I don't want to be doom and gloom about it, but it's also the thing that I'm gonna be a little bit gloom about, because I don't know, man, the buying up studios to have them work on games that are already successful and popping, I wish they could work on something else. I wish they could just make a new game. But
yeah, you like developers working on stuff that they're passionate about, right? And that makes sense. But you know, I think we're just in that era of seeing a lot of acquisitions happening. And this was a smaller acquisition, but still for Blizzard, like they have been taking on so many different studios and so many more employees. So it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess this isn't too surprising. But the fact that that's not something that we should be surprised at anymore, it says a lot about the industry right now.
100%. Story number two, Sony starting a new gaming brand for PC. This is Cameron Faulkner at The Verge. Sony is attempting to reach out to more than just PS5 gamers with its new InZone brand of gaming monitors and headsets. Made for PC, but with specs to take full advantage of the PS5, along with the Xbox Series X and the $899 InZone M9 is the flagship product of the bunch. It's a 27-inch 4K IPS gaming monitor built to match the aesthetic of the PS5 while having basically every imaginable spec that gamers may universally want. Sans OLED panel, of course. It has 144Hz refresh rate, that's not so common to find with a 4K screen, a 1 millisecond response time, variable refresh rate, plus DisplayPort and HDMI 2.1 ports. It can also display video via a USB-C. In a mind-boggling move, Sony doesn't include any video cables with the $899 M9. Sony spokesperson Chloe Canta shared a statement with The Verge that said the company chose not to include those because, quote, the required cable type, version, and length are different based on a customer's use case, end quote. There's a cheaper $529 M3 monitor coming this winter that makes some omissions to meet the lower price point. It lops off full array local dimming, drops to 1080p, and bumps the HDR down to 400 nits of peak brightness. Otherwise, the feature set is similar with one exception. The refresh rate goes up to 240Hz. Moving on to the other product category that Sony's InZone is launching, headsets. The H9 sits at the top of its new lineup, rocking big over-ear cans, and has the ability to handle both 2.4 GHz wireless and Bluetooth simultaneously. The design is nothing like the Pulse 3D headset that Sony launched alongside the PS5. Instead, it's more similar to competing gaming headsets featuring highly adjustable sidearms, a flip-to-mute microphone that can offer a healthy dose of side tone, and pillowy ear pads. Like its monitor,
I'm so sorry.
was it the pillowy ear pads that got you?
What the fuck?
It's soft. You want soft headphones? You gotta love that.
I guess.
Like its
you
monitors,
don't have to say it that way, you know.
Pillowy ear pads.
I don't like know its why, monitors. Anyway, sorry. Continue.
Like its monitors, Sony has a unique angle with the H9 that other hardware makers haven't tried, to my knowledge. PC players can install its InZone companion app along with Sony's 360 Spatial Sound Personalizer to get a more customized spatial audio profile. Oddly, doing this requires you to take pictures of your ears. And yes, Sony claims that doing this will actually improve audio. It all comes full circle because, 2 years ago, around this time, when Sony was first revealing the PS5, there was the whole, I don't know if you remember this, Ella, but Mark Cerny talking in front of a fake audience of just like shadowy figures. And he was talking, yes, this is like during GDC. He was talking about like all the technical hardware specs of the PS5. One of the things he talked about was the strides they were making in headphone technology. And one of the things he mentioned was the fact that you'd be able to take pictures of your ears, send them to Sony, and they would be able to improve your audio quality based on the shape of your ears.
No. This is like when they ask for like, hey, what shoes are you wearing? And they secretly want feet pics. Someone has an ear fetish, and that's what they're asking for right now. Like, don't give them that, chat. Don't give them that.
I love the different life experiences we have because, like, as you said, it's like when somebody asks you, like, what size of shoes you're wearing. In my head, they're about to get robbed. I thought you'd literally be like, and then they rob you of your shoes.
Dude, I forgot, like, how Mystery Science Theater this audience looked. It's fucking hilarious to go back to.
No, this is...
This was his GDC talk.
Because this was at the beginning of pandemic when nobody knew what to do. Everybody was freaking out. They were like, how do we do a presentation?
Not this.
But yeah, Mark Cerny, toward the end of it, he was like, yeah, you can take pictures of your ears and mail it to Sony, and they'll do the thing. And now you have it.
Mail it to markcerny@sony.com.
I do like the fact that it seems like, from what I understand, it is you're just installing an app, you're taking pictures of your ears, and then I assume you upload it to the app, and the app automates it in some way. I assume that's how it works. Maybe they do it, mail you new headphones. I have no idea, but I'm glad to see this is actually happening, and I hope it improves audio quality, because I'm totally down to do this. This sounds awesome.
If I'm sending free ear pictures, it better. If it doesn't give me, like, custom pillowy, cushiony goodness, I don't want it. But also, I've been using, like, in-ear earbuds, and this is from Sennheiser, and they're, like, just as great.
Dude, Sennheiser is fantastic.
Yeah, I just can't do the over-the-ear stuff anymore, especially with, like, glasses and stuff. So for me, it's, like, it's not as comfortable anymore. I don't care how pillowy it is. It's just not as comfortable because, like, it's still pressure on your head. So I'm just like, you know, I'm fine. I'm good.
How do you feel about Sony leaning into the PC side of things, starting an actual PC brand and making actual hardware geared toward that audience?
Lower the price and then I'll think about it.
Yeah, it's expensive, right?
Yeah.
$899 for the flagship monitor.
Yeah. And that's then you want me to send out free ear pictures? No. Pay for my ear pictures so that I can pay for that monitor, and then we'll talk, okay? That is so much money. Like, I love gaming, but I don't love gaming that much. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's a lot of money. I do think that the idea of it is smart, right? Especially now that you're having more PlayStation first party games come to PC. Like, you know, you got Uncharted, you got I forget if Last of Us Part 1 is actually coming or not, but you have God of War, or not Ragnar, you have God of War, the original God of War, 2018 coming to PC. You have like a whole slate of games now making their way to PC for PlayStation, and with that, doubling down and going, cool, how do we cater to the audience so that we can, one, make more money off that audience, but then also create an ecosystem that they can subscribe to, you know, get those monitors out there, get more headsets geared toward that audience, get other stuff, right? Like, what if you could double down and get PlayStation Premium and all that stuff on PC in a way that is going to engage the audience more? I think it's smart, but yeah, I do think that there's going to be a lot of learnings in terms of, cool, how do we do this and also make it viable at the same time in terms of price point and making sure the technology is there and everything.
Yeah, you bring up a good point about how Sony is like starting to dip into PC gaming. And I know people hate to compare the two, but I seriously think that Xbox Game Pass has given Sony an idea of what they need to be doing, because for the longest time, they've been so exclusive. They haven't wanted to do cross-platform anything. But now they're realizing, because Xbox decided to let that go and they've been handling things with PC so much, they're like, ah, shit. You mean we could have tapped into this whole market? Which is why we see a lot of games coming to PC now, which is great, because now that's going to expand their audience and potentially get people to buy PS5s or the next consoles whenever they realize, oh, hey, these exclusives are actually really cool. I would love to experience the other games that I missed out on that might not come to PC. So Sony is pretty late to the game, so we're going to see them stumbling a lot. But at the same time, like, God damn, dude, at least throw me a cord. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, no, not including the cords. It's them like trying to cut costs, but also like keeping the thing at a high price.
We gave you a cord when you got the PS5. Just deal with it.
Yeah, just deal with it. But like, here's what I will say is, I think having those multiple price points could work in their favor. The only flaw with it is that they don't have anything that is at a low price point right now. Like, I feel like for them it is medium and high. Yeah. You know, they are, for the PC stuff, they are going for, it seems like, high spec, right? It seems like this monitor is awesome. You know, all the stuff they talk about, I watched through, the Verge has a video that they put up on their channel kind of previewing the whole thing, and it seems really cool. It seems like these are top-notch monitors that you can get. And so for somebody who is in the market for that, that's not me, right? I don't have $899 for a monitor. People do, right? And the people that are out there that do have that, I'm sure we'll look at this as a, oh shit, dude, this sounds awesome, let me get in there. And then maybe if they're not already in the PlayStation ecosystem, being able to buy in at that high price point might make them look at the PlayStation 5 and go, oh man, let me get in that at a medium price point. The thing is, there's not a low price point option for PlayStation right now. And maybe because they're in the lead, maybe because they've been killing it, they might not need one. But when you switch over and you look at Xbox, for example, right, you have the Series S, which is great for a group of people that want to hop into next gen or current gen and want to experience the next gen titles without paying up all the money for the 4K, 60fps, all that shit. If they want to hop in at a higher price point, they can then hop in at Xbox Series X. But then also coming up, you have Xbox Cloud Gaming coming to Samsung TVs and coming to what, like, many devices that you may already own, right? And that's only going to continue to proliferate. And so you have on Xbox all these different entry points that you can get price-wise that makes it, I think, real easy for people to lean or get into that ecosystem. Whereas for PlayStation, it is, here's a lot of money you can spend now on, and not even for PlayStation, it's Sony, because I think InZone is going to be very separate from PlayStation. But for Sony, you have, here's the PC stuff that you can pay a lot of money for when you're talking about the PC gaming brand stuff. And then you, here's PS5 that you can get for $500, which is still a lot of money. But I think you might want to get in a lower price option. And maybe the disc list there, considering
Seems kind of scummy. That's scummy as shit, so no.
Yeah. But who knows? Like, I would love to see some kind of $300 or $200 option for PlayStation, but that might be a far-flung future. Who knows?
Oh, probably.
Let's talk about something that's a bit more near future. With story number 3, Sonic Frontiers Cyberspace Dimensions features traditional platforming stages. This is from Marcus Stewart at Game Informer. If you watched the Nintendo Direct yesterday, you saw the new Sonic trailer. Bear showing it right now if you're a video watcher. And in the trailer, they have the fucking cyberspace stuff where it is the linear Sonic levels. I'm going to hop in again to Marcus's article here from Game Informer, but then I'll get my own little preview because I got to experience some of these levels at Summer Game Fest. I'm not been able to talk about it until now. But the article goes like this. Sonic Frontiers' open zone format has been a centerpiece of discussion, and for good reason. Dropping Sonic in an open world style environment gives fans a new, bigger arena to roam around and go fast in. However, traditionalists may be happy to learn that Frontiers includes standard, linear platforming stages hidden in unlockable areas called cyberspace. I got to play one of these stages during my demo, and this is still Game Informer talking, during Summer Game Fest Playdays a couple weeks ago to get hands-on on how these self-contained levels complement Frontiers' exploration-heavy gameplay. As seen during today's Nintendo Direct Mini, while exploring the open world, which you can read about in my previous preview, I collected special items called Portal Gears. You can obtain these gears by solving puzzles and completing other types of challenges throughout Starfall Islands. And I'm going to chime in and say, I think it's primarily boss battles that you're getting those Portal Gears from. There's other puzzles and shit, but I don't know if those get you Portal Gears. I think those get you like other shit, and it's mainly the boss battles that'll get you the portal gears. Jumping back into the article, presenting them at Stone Landmarks. I didn't mean to do like a drive-by.
You're
correction.
Allowed to breathe, Blessing. Oh my god, take a deep breath. Holy shit.
Here's the thing: I don't want like the full show to be reading because there's so much reading that goes on in the show. So I like try to get through the articles and then get into the conversation. But back to the article. Presenting them at Stone Landmarks resembling a throne establishes a connection to the cyberspace, a digital dimension Sega describes as a, quote, game within a game. Cyberspace treats players to fast-paced platforming stages fans of 3D Sonic games will be intimately familiar with, providing a more focused diversion to open zone wandering. The futuristic stage I visited featured the same platforming trappings fans would come to expect. As I sprinted down the linear lane, I hopped on bounce pads, used my homing attack to ricochet off objects, and surfed rails until I reached the finish line. Completing a cyberspace level rewards vault keys used to unlock new areas throughout Starfall Islands. This particular cyberspace stage didn't offer anything 3D Sonic veterans haven't seen before. Still, Frontiers' improved controls meant that it at least played a little better than the Hedgehog's recent outings. If nothing else, cyberspace gives fans pockets of familiarity while providing another diversion in Frontiers' world, which may assuage some fans' concern about the game's perceived lack of activities. Assuage.
I'm pretty sure it's assuage.
Assuage. Okay. Still, I don't think I've heard the word assuage.
Thank God you're here, Stella.
I've never once used the word assuage in real life or in an article before. That's a fire one. Like, I'm adding that to the fucking rotation.
Not gonna lie, I started tuning out a little bit, and then I heard sewage, and I was like, "What?"
I almost said assuage. I was like, "What? Assuage." I'm gonna start using that. That's fire. Stella, are you interested in Sonic at all?
Not really. I'm not gonna lie. I know this is like, sorry, Chad. I'm gonna make him talk more, but I know that you're really excited for Sonic. But I guess Sonic was. I just kind of missed that growing up. I did like the Sonic movie, which was cute, but I mean, watching this gameplay, it actually looks pretty cool. But what was that one game where you could make your own Sonic? Like you could make your own
Sonic
Hedgehog.
Forces.
Yeah, I remember that and being like, that would be really funny in today's creation manager sort of thing. That'd be really cool, but I don't think that would work now. But it looks really cool. I'm happy for Sonic fans. I have no what is it? No horse in the race. So I'm
no
like,
hedgehog.
I don't.
In the race.
No hedge in the hog.
Yeah. Yeah.
This cyberspace stuff is dope as hell. This is the one thing I couldn't talk about in my preview, and it upset me because this was the coolest shit. That was part of my preview, right? So, like, to kind of reiterate the article a little bit, you know, as you're exploring the open world of Sonic Frontiers, you are coming across, like, platforming challenges, you're coming across boss fights, all this stuff. You're basically hunting down bosses to then get keys to then open up these essentially shrines, like in Breath of the Wild. And these shrines will then lead you into linear Sonic levels that you can play through. And they're fucking awesome. Like, Greg, during our preview for Summer Game Fest, talked about how there was a moment while I was playing Sonic where it was me and Tim, we were sitting on the same couch, and, like, I was playing and I had the headphones on. I get into the cyberspace level. I then take off my headphones and I go, "Tim, listen to this shit." And I give Tim the headphones, and Tim's like, "Oh, let's fucking go." Because, you know, for how many people complain about the music of the open world and how, like, "Oh man, it's gonna be this piano shit the entire time." That's where the traditional, "Oh, here's the upbeat, like, fucking dope shit" plays, right? Like, the cyberspace levels play and sound like actual Sonic levels, which I think is a smart way to do it. I think there's still a lot that is left to be desired. You know, like, the cyberspace stuff does feel like, in terms of aesthetic, generic Sonic bullshit just thrown all over the place. In terms of, here's Green Hill Zone, but it's not Green Hill Zone, it's a fucked up version of Green Hill Zone. Here's, like, a city level, but it's, like, a fucked up city level where, like, everything is cyberspacey. It has, like, a cyberspace kind of style to it. It's like, I still have much desire from that stuff, but I think in terms of the gameplay loop of fight bosses, get the keys, do a linear Sonic level, get back into the open world, search for more shit, do more platforming challenges, fight another boss, get more keys, do another Sonic linear level, I really like that. I think that's a really fun way to go about it. I still hope they delay the game. I still hope that, like, they really polish it. Because now I'm at the point that I'm so excited for it that I want it to be good. I want it to be polished. I want it to be pristine. And there's still a lot of technical stuff in there that I don't think is pristine, that I think, you know, could use way more development time and way more TLC in there. But
hey, when is it supposed to be released?
Holiday. There's not a strict release date. It just says holiday, which gives room for it to delay.
Yeah, I think they have time.
There's some holidays in February.
Yeah, there are some holidays. I mean, they do say holiday 2022. But, you know, just be like, "Oh, actually, the holiday was Valentine's Day, 2023.
If anything, they can always have launch day updates, which I know people always shit on. But, I mean, it's better than nothing, so.
That's true. Stella, before we get into our next news story, I want to let people out there know about patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can go get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
This podcast is brought to you by something Tim literally uses every day. AG1. Tim's birthday is June 30th, and he decided to give himself the gift of taking care of his body with AG1. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging, all of the things! Tim mixes AG1 with his water, loves the taste, and says he's feeling better than ever. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews, and Athletic Greens is a climate-neutral certified company. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it! No need for a million different pills or supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutrition insurance.
And we're back.
Hey,
Barrett,
Blessing.
He's doing his best. What's up, Stella?
Since Barrett won't marry you in Final Fantasy 14, you can get your vitamin D dose with Athletic Greens.
With Athletic Greens. Let's hop in to story number 4. We got a couple of review roundups for you. Both DNF Duel and Monster Hunter Rise, the DLC Sunbreak, have reviews popped this morning and I think yesterday as well. Let's start off with DNF Duel. Right now, that's sitting on Metacritic at a 79. It's sitting at an 80 on OpenCritic. Ronnie Barrier at IGN gave it an 8 out of 10
Shout out
to Ronnie. I love Ronnie.
Absolutely adore Ronnie. I don't know who Ronnie is, but I adore him because this is a pretty good review. DNF Duel's simplified inputs make it a great game for beginners to pick up, press a few buttons, and get right into the action. However, that simplicity doesn't mean it isn't also a great game to play online after you really understand the complex mechanics underneath those inputs and how any two characters interact with one another. Getting from that first point to the second may dissolve into a series of frustrating knowledge checks until you learn the hard way that what you can and can't do. But on the other side of the grind is a fun fighting game with enough hidden depth to hopefully sustain a player base that thrives on continued discovery. And then Connor McCarr at VG247 gave it 4 out of 5 stars and says, DNF is a perplexing cocktail of well-implemented accessibility options that make it pleasing to the senses on the initial sip. Keep drinking and you'll be confronted with a bewildering mix of intense flavors. I love how metaphorical this is.
Okay.
That will surprise everyone. VG247 get into their writer's bag when they're writing a review, all right? This is an IGN. Okay. This is where the poetry comes out. An intense mix of flavors that will surprise everyone. Hit the spot for some and revolt others. Drink deeper still and you'll see the full depth of the glass with subtle tones that you can spend hours figuring it out. In an industry slowly and often clumsily stomping towards some nebulous, washed-out esports future where it feels as though all games must be perfectly balanced with big bucks competitive gaming in mind, I'm happy that some developers like Aiding and Arc System Works remain willing to make games that are still a little jank, still a little busted. DNF Duel is unapologetic and a lot of fun. For Dungeon Fighter fans, this is obviously a great purchase. For fans of the genre, the same thing goes. Stella, are you a fighting game person at all?
Nope.
Do you have it? Have you peeped DNF Duel at all?
I have not. I know that Ronnie was working on the review, so that's like all I knew about it. I know that also Mitchell Saltzman at IGN is also a huge fighting game player, but I don't know. I liked Killer Instinct, which was super fun, but I'm just not very good at these games. So I never really got into them. I think the art style looks cool, but. Yeah. You know.
That's the thing is, Arc System Works, like, if they get every single thing wrong, they'll still get art style right. Like, they know how to make a game look good, whether it's Dragon Ball FighterZ, whether it's Guilty Gear Strive, or whether it's this. Like, this game looks gorgeous. And I love that you mentioned Mitchell Saltzman, because Mitchell Saltzman is one that is a dude who I play fighting games with here and there, because we're all in, like, a Games Press fighting games Discord. And so, like, usually when we're reviewing games like this, we'll go to the Discord and be like, yo, who has XYZ? All right, let's battle. Let's squad up. Sadly, didn't get to do that much with this because the online wasn't turned on pre-release. And so, like, I've only had to wait until the game was actually out to play online a little bit. And that's actually when I started playing, period. And this is one that I want to spend a little bit more time with, but I'm not as engaged with as much as I was engaged with Guilty Gear Strive and Arc System Works games of the past. Like, it looks cool. It has that Arc Systems games feel, which means, like, it's a good feeling fighting game if you love 2D fighters. The thing for me is that the balancing so far feels a bit aggressive for newcomers in a way where they do the cool thing where they kind of simplify the move set in terms of if you press X is basically your special button. So you press right X, you press down X, you're executing moves similar to Smash Bros. Right, it's that easy. You're not having to worry about all these quarter circles or all these advanced inputs.
Dude, fuck the quarter circles. Holy shit.
Yeah. Like, and that's the thing is for newcomers or more casual players, like, that's going to be such a great thing. I've been getting my ass kicked by people who pick up certain characters that are good at spamming projectiles and just like fucking go off. Like, there's a character, I think her name might be Launcher or something along those lines, but every single one of her moves is a projectile move, and that was my first person that I fought on ranked against a player. Oh, wow. And I tell you that the whole match was just them throwing shit at me one after the other, and me playing as this character who, like, I had gone through arcade with. I played in the beta as well, and I was doing fairly decent with them. And I did a little bit of the story mode, hopped into online with that character, fought against Launcher, and was just getting my shit kicked in a way that just wasn't fun because I was sitting there like, I don't know how to get out of this. I am just getting rained on. Right. Yeah. And, like, you know, I hopped into other online matches too and fared a little bit better. But it was the thing of, there's something that just doesn't feel as fluid in this game compared to other games, like compared to, like, even Guilty Gear Strive, because I think that is the easiest comparison when you're talking about Arc Systems Works. The balancing feels a bit aggressive once you, like, get past that first hill. And then I think there comes a place where you emerge on that higher tier and it's like, cool, now I'm ready to compete. Now that I am among, like, the people that know how this fucking game works and knows how it plays, I'm ready to compete. But I think for a fighting game experience, you want it to have a steady flow progression none of those points feel super frustrating, whether you're at the beginning or you're at the middle, right? You don't want the only people to be having fun in your game to be the people at the higher tiers or the people that know how to spam shit. That said, you know, again, the game is pretty. The movement feels great. The characters, I think, are awesome. I like the different movesets. It seems like if you're a Dungeon Fighter fan, you're going to be into this because this game is based off of the Dungeon Fighter franchise. But right now, if I had to recommend a fighting game from Arc System Works, I'd be like, I don't know, man, go back and play Guilty Gear Strive, because Guilty Gear Strive still has it. And also, I think there was an update recently that will appeal to people that are looking to jump in with something with newer content. But that's DNF Duel. Stella, let's talk about Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak. Are you a Monster Hunter person?
Oh, I used to play Monster Hunter World a lot. So for some reason, Rise didn't resonate with me as much as World did. I think maybe because of the it was originally on the Switch, and I was like, oh, I don't really like this as much. I know it went back to the more classic Monster Hunter mechanics, which is probably why it didn't resonate. It didn't resonate with me as much. But yeah, I really liked the more modernized Monster Hunter World. So yeah.
I for this roundup, I want to bring in one review from Tom Marks at IGN. I know that guy. Tom is lovely. I met Tom once at a Persona 5 Royal review event, and he is the sweetest person I've ever met. So shout out to Tom Marks. Right now, MH Rise Sunbreak is sitting at an 86 on Metacritic and 89 on OpenCritic. And yeah, IGN gave it a 7 out of 10. This is Tom Marks. Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak is a relatively simple expansion, but that doesn't mean it isn't a whole lot of fun. The new and returning monsters and locales are all top-notch, and the renewed grind is one I'm excited to spend lots more time in. That said, Sunbreak isn't nearly as substantial or surprising as Iceborne was for Monster Hunter World, lacking fresh ideas beyond clever AI followers that are restricted to single-player hunts, and even abandoning rampage quests without really trying to fill the gap their absence left. Flying through the air on Rise's wirebugs is still an absolute blast, though, and anyone who enjoyed the base game will definitely enjoy the shot in the arm Sunbreak's creative monsters provide, even if you may eventually start to feel like you're hunting through a familiar jungle in more ways than one. Stella, what would it take for Monster Hunter Rise to get you back in?
I don't know. It's not anything it's doing wrong. Like, it's a great Monster Hunter game. I'm not into the whole grinding right now, I guess. Like, I just want to play. The most grinding that I've done in a game recently is probably in V Rising, where it's like you build your own base and stuff, and that's more incentivizing to me than like getting armor and such. So for me, I think that's like the most incentivizing thing at the moment for grinding. I'm just like, I don't really want to spend too much time in a game, because I did that with Monster Hunter World already, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready for a game like that again.
Yeah, that's the thing is, Monster Hunter strikes me as you got to be in the mood for this kind of game. And yeah. Monster Hunter Rise has been one that I've been keeping a little bit of an eye on, because I've always wanted to try out Monster Hunter, but I've never been in the right mindset for it. And I remember talking to Imran like a year ago when Monster Hunter Rise first came out, and he was like, yo, this is one of the best games of the year. This is the shit. If you're interested in Monster Hunter, jump in now. And I just never found that opportunity to want to hop in. And Monster Hunter Rise seems like another opportunity, but I'm still in the place where I'm like, do I want to do it? You know, and I know talking to other people, like even talking to Greg or talking to Kevin, you know, there are people that were very into Monster Hunter World. But I think with World not being super long ago, right? I guess it was, 4 years ago, which might be long at this point.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel long. You know, I there are so many people that probably got that energy out there where you've already been through the Monster Hunter grind recently. Do you want to go through the Monster Hunter grind again so soon? Or do you want to wait for the next Monster Hunter World 2 or like whatever the next big Monster Hunter game is after Rise? Like, I can kind of see that separation. That said, you know, whenever one of these trailers pops up at a Nintendo Direct or pops up at whatever show, like at a Capcom showcase, I'm always like, oh, that seems pretty interesting. That seems cool. Yeah, like one of these days I might pick up Monster Hunter.
Yeah, it's a fun game. It's a fun game if you want to spend some time in, like, you know, hunting monsters, using cool ass weapons. But just I did a lot of the grinding with World, and when I played Rise, I was like, I don't know, something just... Maybe I'm just like beyond the whole grinding system now, because like I remember it taking forever in World to get like a specific gem that I needed to make one armor set complete. And I was like, I can't do that again.
Story number 5, Skull and Bones appears to be arriving in November. This is Ryan Dinsdale at IGN. Ubisoft's open-world pirate game Skull and Bones will reportedly release on November 8th after years of troubled development. As reported by Eurogamer, industry insider at Illumia, @_Italia shared on Twitter that a release date had been found amid an apparent Xbox store entry, also listing a plethora of DLC packs for the game. These include a pre-order bonus, Bloody Bones Legacy Mission, the Ashen Corsair Mission, the Smuggler Pass Token, a digital soundtrack, an art book, and premium bonus pack. While it's unclear exactly what these are individually, their placements on the Xbox Store certainly implies that Ubisoft is nearing an official announcement of Skull and Bones' release date, from which point players will be able to pre-order it. Repeated leaker Tom Henderson subsequently followed up to add weight to the November 8th release date. Cool. Skull and Bones is one that it doesn't do it for me, but I find it fascinating just in the sense that it's been in just a place of fucking just in the ether, right? For like the last 5 years. Like Ubisoft announced it, it kind of went away and we've known of its existence. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it's about to come back out of nowhere of Ubisoft being like, and it's out this fall. And I'm very excited to see how it does because I watched the leaked trailer or the leaked gameplay breakdown that came out a few months ago. Okay. I don't know, it looks interesting. It looks all right. It looks like a video game.
So there's no official gameplay footage or anything of it out right now?
Not since they originally revealed it.
Yeah, like I thought, I remember them showing like a little bit of like the idea of it when they were like, this is the
No. Yeah.
Spiritual successor to Assassin's Creed Black Flag, but you can only be on your ship.
That's the thing, they showed the ship versus ship gameplay.
That's nice, but that's not enough. I mean, here's the thing. We want concrete, especially from Ubisoft. Like, here's the thing. Ubisoft, they can make good games, but they just haven't. They have not understood what exactly gamers want in this current environment, and they have not been able to hit with their FPS games. I mean, Hyperscape was a mess, and X Defiant, whatever, that's not even, like, being, I don't know, talked about anymore. But, like, they have been missing so much on their games. And like, I have people work at Ubisoft, I would love them, but like, they need to understand what it is that people want in this current atmosphere of gaming. And I'm really hoping that Skull and Bones is a decent game. Oof. But the fact that they haven't really shown a whole lot makes me a little bit worried. I mean, listen, I want some concrete shit to make sure that, oh, cool, if I'm going to sink time into this, or like, if I'm going to actually jump into this, I want to make sure it's something that I'm interested in. Because for the longest time, Ubisoft just has not been at the top of their game. And I don't know why. It just seems like they're like a few years behind on what people wanted. Like
it feels like an identity crisis almost, right?
Yeah, like
what kind of games do we want to make and how do we double down on that?
Yeah, and like, what was it? People were like, oh, the newest X Defiant was that the Tom Clancy game?
Rainbow Six Extraction might be the one. Well, X Defiant,
there's another one.
X Defiant is like the collaboration Tom Clancy where it's like all these different Tom Clancy games
and people are like, this is not together. What anyone ever wanted. Why are you making this? No one asked for any of this. So it's like I feel like they're just very out of tune with what their community wants. So I mean, they always do really well with Assassin's Creed games, but that's like the one thing that they have anymore.
But now it seems like they're turning that into a service game with Assassin's Creed Infinity or Infinite or whatever the hell they're calling it.
God, that's right.
Yeah, their one W this year will be Sparks of Hope, the Mario and Rabbids game. But it won't be considered a Ubisoft W because that's a Nintendo license, you know?
Yeah.
I played Roller Champions for a day. Had a decent time.
Yeah, for a day.
And then you went back
to Knockout City, bless.
And then I went back to Knockout City and had a lot of fun. Here's what I'll say about Skull and Bones. At that original reveal, 5 years ago at this point, they showed that ship versus ship gameplay and it seemed very like, it seems whatever. Like, are you telling me I'm not going to be able to get off my ship in this game? Like, what did you guys not learn?
I'd rather just replay Black Flag at that point, you know?
Yeah, at that point, it's like, go to Sea of Thieves. Yeah.
Yeah. You could have a cat. You could have a dog.
And this is what I'll say though. In the leaked gameplay that was leaked a few months ago, it does seem like they're answering for a lot of people's complaints with that original thing. Like it seems like they went back and revamped a lot of those ideas and try to lean into more Sea of Thieves-ish type gameplay. And so that gives me hope. But I will say that it is still Ubisoft. And so like I would not be surprised if this week or next week we get the Skull and Bones reveal, we go, oh shit, all right, that looks fine, that looks all right, and then the game comes out and then you have it, you people play it for a week and then the content isn't there to make it live, right? Like you play it for a week and you go, oh, where's all the shit, where's all the cool cosmetics, oh, where's all the different missions I can go on to, like, exactly. Keep me going, where's the crossplay?
they have good ideas. They're just not able to execute on them very well. And it sucks. And I feel like they're just not connected with their audience or the community at all. And there needs to be an open line of communication so that they can actually iron these things out. And here's the thing. They test a lot of games and they keep things very like, hey, you can't do this, 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 like you can't show any of this. Like, but we'll like, we want your feedback, but they don't really do anything with that. So the fact that they make it so closed off to who they test these products with also is hurting their end product. So I'm really hoping that Skull and Bones is going to be something that people want to play because it looks interesting. I like the realistic graphics. So I'm kind of hopeful, but at the same time, I see Ubisoft and I'm like, I'm going to be very hesitant about this. So,
well, Stella, let me sprinkle in some positive Ubisoft news for you. With story number 6, Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope get some new details. This is Chastity Vicencio, the homie, at news.ubisoft.com. Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope is coming to Nintendo Switch on October 20th, bringing back beloved heroes Mario, Rabbit Peach, and Rabbit Luigi, and teaming up with them new allies, including a very unexpected one, Bowser. Bowser brings his explosive set of skills to his team as he fights alongside Mario to free his bewitched minions from the grasp of the mysterious entity known as Cursa. During today's Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope showcase, Ubisoft announced that new composers were joining the adventure. Legendary composer Yoko Shimomura and the multi-award-winning Gareth Coker. Acclaimed video game composer Grant Kirkhope also returns to the franchise after masterfully scoring Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle. Let me tell you, Stella, when it comes to Mario plus Rabbids, that's not really my type of game. I'm not like a real-time strategy person whatsoever. I usually look at those games and I go, ugh, trash pile. Not for me. I'm not playing this bullshit. I did have a passive interest in Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle, especially last year when they first announced Sparks of Hope. I infamously bought the game on a stream, downloaded it, and then just did not touch it. Sparks of Hope, I've kind of given it up. Right, of I'm not gonna play this game. It's not my kind of game, and I've come to peace with that. Here's what I'll say: this fucking award winning cast of composers is making me go, oh shit, I might need to play this shit. Because you're telling me Yoko Shimomura, the composer of Kingdom Hearts, fantastic soundtracks on them ones. Gareth Coker, who's done such classics as Ori and the Blind Forest and Ori and the Will of the Wisps, and then returning Grant Kirkhope, the GOAT, who's done Banjo and DK64 and a million fantastic soundtracks from Rare. That is an amazing lineup of composers. At the very least, I'll be listening to the soundtrack if I don't play this game.
This is so cool, though. Honestly, I have not. So when I first saw the Mario and Rabbids at Team Up, I was like, oh my God, what is this? But then I actually started seeing gameplay and I heard people talk about it. And it's actually really interesting and fun. So the fact that the gameplay is pretty engaging, I think that says something about how they've been able to create this game and mesh the two worlds. And I think that's really cool. Also, I saw the cute little, what is it? The rabbit star. So cute. I want a plushie of that.
Oh yeah, the rabbit
Luma. Yes, I want a plushie of that. It's so cute.
The rabbit Luma is adorable.
I will say, as someone definitely not into games like XCOM and stuff, I really gravitated towards Kingdom Battle, the first one, and like this is definitely like a highly anticipated game for me this year. Probably out of all of the new games coming out this year, it's probably my most anticipated as of right now. Maybe Ragnarok comes out this year.
I wish I was more into this kind of game because like the art style
is dope, man.
Fantastic.
It's really great. I think you should give it another shot.
I also do have beef with rabbits. I don't like those little guys.
I don't think anybody
loves like worse
the
minions.
Rabbits. You
oh
know,
my God.
Like that's definitely an aspect where it's like very whatever, but it's still such a fun time.
Wait, like, so this plays like XCOM then?
Yeah, the first one is like literally grid-based XCOM.
Oh my God. Hold on. So yeah. So my boyfriend plays XCOM and loves those games. I think I'm going to have to make him play this game.
Do it.
Oh my God. This looks, that's so dumb. I love it.
Yeah, here's the thing that got me too. In the write-up, I didn't include everything, but one of the things they mentioned in the write-up is that like there is a bit more action and exploration infused into the gameplay, and that's the thing that does appeal to me, you know. And they double down in the write-up too, saying, hey, for casual players or new players alike, like, we got you, like, this is going to appeal to you. So I don't know, when it comes out, maybe I'll try it. I'll give it a shot at
maybe,
the very least
maybe,
for Yoko Shimomura.
Yeah, maybe it'll like ease you into learning how to play XCOM, and then you can play that, you know.
I mean, honestly, I would love that because I want to get into Midnight Suns as well. That game looks super cool. And if Mario & Rabbids is the gateway drug into getting to more games like that, and then eventually I do play XCOM.
Imagine.
I mean, yeah. It would be such a, that would be such a fantastic way to go. Like, that's the best case scenario for me. But I feel like with everybody, there are like those genres that just never click with you, right? And yeah. Like, I've never been able to make it happen with these real-time strategy games. Yeah. Even though I love chess. I feel like that is like the one weird thing is that I fucking love chess as a video, as not a video game, but maybe sometimes as a video game. But like, I love chess as a game, right? Like, let me fucking, you know, be strategic. Let me place things out. Let me figure out also, my next turn. Also,
I don't think these are RTSs, I'm going to be honest with you.
What's the correct term for the genre? For the XCOM types? Just strategies? Turn-based strategies?
I think it's a strategy.
Just strategy?
It's a strategy game.
Okay, even still, like, that's not my type of shit. See, that's how much
it's not real time, because it is like a little bit turn based in that sense.
That's true. Like,
I don't call it turn based strategy because that's more of like Final Fantasy and Persona and stuff like that.
No, and Pokemon, right? I guess like real time is more StarCraft. I would think that this is turn based strategy.
But they don't. Okay.
Kind of funny.
I don't know. I don't fuck with these games, so I don't know.
I think when you're talking about JRPG battle system,
if there's
no
flesh gun, Stella doesn't want it. Stella doesn't want anything to do with it. You know.
Just give me a Glock.
A flesh Glock. Story number 7 to round out the Roper Report. We got more cast for the Fallout Amazon series. This is Joel Alderson at Variety. The Fallout TV series adaptation at Amazon has added Kyle MacLachlan, Zelia Mendez-Jones, and Aaron Moten to its cast as series regulars, Variety has learned exclusively. The trio joined previously announced cast members Ella Purnell and Walton Goggins in the series version of the popular video game franchise. As with past casting announcements, exact details on who the new additions will be playing are kept under wraps. Stella, is this one that you're looking forward to, the Fallout Amazon series?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you told me like a few years ago that Amazon was doing a Fallout series, I would be very concerned because I love Fallout. I'm not wearing a shirt that can show it, but I have a Stimpak tattoo on my arm. So
oh, shit.
I'm the way that they've handled the boys, and from what I've heard, Wheel of Time, I feel like they're on the right track to making good shows. So I feel more hopeful that this is actually going to be a good show. And I love the Fallout universe. I think it's so cool. I will literally go down rabbit holes just looking up different vaults and different experiments and like world lore. It is so cool. There's so much to unlock. So it makes me really excited to see that they are making this. Now I'm very curious to see what storyline they're going to follow or like where it's going to fit in on the timeline, if it's going to be in its own thing. So yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited too. You know, I have those same questions of what is the story going to be here? Is it going to go out? I kind of doubt it's going to go after any sort of adapting any specific Fallout game. I don't think it's going to be like a Fallout 3, you're in the Capital Wasteland, or a Fallout 4, you're in Boston. I would think that you pick maybe your own region. Maybe you do middle of America or find some new like iconic city like a Seattle or something to double down on and really create vibrant. That is the question I have with that though is what kind of setting matches up well with what Fallout usually does with the history and like icon status of the cities it tackles. Because with New Vegas, obviously you have Las Vegas, and Las Vegas is like lost. There's a lot to tackle there, right?
Yeah.
Boston has a lot of history to it. DC has a lot of history to it. I think Fallout does a pretty good job of choosing specific. I forget what Fallout 76 was, but they had like the theme song that was like I forget what the song was. Barry, you know which one I'm talking about.
No, I don't.
For 76?
For 76 had a theme song. West Virginia.
Thank you, Nano.
Thank you. Yes. Oh. No, it had that. That kind of like, I think, gave a little bit of character. But I think that was probably the least, no offense to West Virginia, the least iconic setting in terms of what Fallout has done in recent times.
Yeah.
Mm.
I wonder where they can go. Give me Chicago.
Hollywood.
Like a Prohibition era. Ooh, Hollywood would be sick, actually.
Yeah, that'd be super cool.
I love that.
I also love that they got the guy from Twin Peaks in this cast, and especially with the, I forget the actor who's like cast as like the lead role or whatever, but I hope it seems like with the cast that they're getting so far that they might be getting like weird with it, which, you know, I'm down for.
Oh, you got to get weird with Fallout. I think that's the only way you can do it. But yeah, like Chicago Prohibition era, I feel like that'd be sick. There was another one in chat. Somebody said Kansas. They get Kansas out here. Nobody wants Kansas. Nobody wants Kansas. New Orleans was the one in chat that I really liked.
Ooh,
New Orleans really Fallout? Cool. That would be off.
You know
what
would be so cool? If you could go to, like, you could visit the underwater portions. Like, if the city sank, you could go to the underwater portions. That would be so cool. Because like you could
be sick.
You could like change your what is it? Oh my god, you could change your power suit to like a scuba suit so you can breathe underwater. That'd be so sick.
Not experience the nuclear whatever. Like you can survive that.
That'd be so cool.
Honestly, what we're describing right now is a game. I don't even want the Fallout TV show to get the. I want the next game to be in New Orleans. Yeah. Stella, I'm so excited for wherever the next Fallout game ends up being. But us getting the next Fallout game is just so far away. At least like 15 years if we're looking at them making Starfield and Elder Scrolls. But Stella, if I want to know what's coming out to Mom and Crop shops today, where'd I look?
Well, the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Corpse Factory for Switch and PC, Hillbilly Doomsday for Switch, Xbox, and PlayStation, The Legend of Boombo for Switch, Xbox, PlayStation, and PC, and then Pachi Pachi 2 on a Roll for
Les,
PS5
I need a spell check
PS4.
On The Legend of Boombo.
Boombo is spelled B-U-M-Bumbo. Bumbo. I like Bumbo.
The Legend of Bumbo. All right.
B-U-M-B-O.
Why does this look like? Oh, it's a. Is it a prequel to Binding of Isaac? Binding of Isaac.
There's no way it's a prequel to Binding
I think
of Isaac.
It is. Hold on.
Wait, pull it up.
Actually? Yeah.
There's no way.
I'm pulling it up.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Huh. But oh, it's a different genre though.
Yeah.
Oh.
I've never heard of this.
Dude, it's cool. One of those real time strategies.
Stop.
Shut the fuck up, Les.
Yes. Shut up. Oh my god.
Oh,
this is kind of cool.
Oh, someone says
oh, hey,
not
blessing.
As.
Mm. Hmm?
No, go ahead, Sal.
Oh, no, the moment's passed.
It was going to be some fleshy or perverted bullshit.
Yeah, probably.
No, there was poop all over, and then I was like, oh, blessing, I didn't know you made it into a video game. But anyway.
Oh, how fucking dare you. Wow. Consider this your last games daily. Bear, what was that you going to say?
Someone in the chat says not a prequel technically, but related.
Okay.
Interesting. Well, there you have it. New days for you.
Boombo.
Tombstar, the bullet hell space western shooter from Crossy Road developer Andy Sum and Co. is coming to Steam on July 20th. And then Star Ocean 6, the Divine Force, is launching on October 27th. Deal of the day for you. PS Plus Essential Games lineup has been confirmed. You're getting Crash 4, It's About Time, Dark Pictures Anthology, Man of Madon, and then Arcadageddon. Those are your PS Plus games for the next month, so get hyped for that. Now it's time. kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write in, let us know what we got wrong, as we got it wrong, so we can correct it for those watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and listening later on podcast services around the globe. Golden Spider says Mario plus Rabbids is a turn-based strategy like XCOM and Civ. A real-time strategy is like StarCraft, Total War, etc. I appreciate that. I think that's the gospel we're going with, because that sounds right.
Nah, the science
did
doesn't
that description
add up.
Did that description assuage you?
It did. It assuaged me, Stella. It assuaged me. Listen, I don't come to work at 10 a.m. to be bullied on the middle of a show, all right? It's a sewage.
That's
and
exactly
I'm saying by
what
it.
You do.
Why not?
Listen, I get paid money to get bullied, so I'm down with it, all right? I'm down for it. Tomorrow's hosts for Kind of Funny Games Daily are Greg and Mike Biffle, so get hyped for that. If you're watching this live right now on Twitch, after this is some Disney Mirrorverse for a sponsored stream with Greg, Tim, and Mike. Then afterwards, you're getting some Cycle Frontier. If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, Eastern Weekday Live, right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, but actually before I check off, Stella, where can people find you?
Yeah, god damn it. you can find me everywhere at Parallax Stella. I stream in every day after work. Sometimes I stream with Blessing, and we talk about butts a lot after hours, so that's great. And you can find
you
me.
You play a lot of Apex.
I do. I do a
You're
lot
the
of Apex.
Apex God.
I play a lot of Apex, but I've actually been getting into V Rising. I've actually been going back to Minecraft too, because it's such a chill game. Yeah.
Oh yeah. What is the latest big project you've worked on for work?
Oh,
any
God.
Reviews, any cool articles, any cool things? You do the Daily Fix, correct?
I do the Compete Fix. So that's our esports fix. Yeah. So that's every Monday. But I am actually working on, after this, I'm going to go back to work and work on a Outriders World Slayer tips and tricks video. So y'all can keep an eye out on that for at IGN.com. So yeah.
Hell yeah. We got a post show to do. So until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you. Game daily.